In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
You might have an assumption about the term deportation. Perhaps it's that it's often done for criminal reasons, or maybe that it's a simple process to just send a migrant back to their country of origin. Well, it's not usually about criminality, and it's definitely not a simple process. Nothing we're discussing today is simple, except for one thing. A few years ago, the federal government pledged to create a program that would allow more migrants to stay in Canada. And when I say migrants, I mean everyone from asylum seekers who crossed at Wroxham Road to temporary foreign workers and international students. But over the past 2 years, despite that pledge, the government has deported more people than any government in more than a decade. Now, there is a whole spectrum of political opinion on when, if, and how many migrants Canada should be deporting when resources like housing and healthcare are scarce. But no matter how you feel about it, something's just not working here. How did we end up with the exact opposite of the government's stated aims? Who exactly are the migrants who find themselves at risk of deportation? How much money is all this costing us? And is there a better way? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Nushin Ziafati is a freelance journalist in Toronto. She wrote about Canada increasingly deporting migrants for The Breach. Hello, Nushin.
Hi, Jordan. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Why don't you start with a person, because that's what's at the heart of this story. Tell me about Taran Gadara. How did he get here? Who is he? What's his life like in Canada? What's happening to him?
Yeah, for sure. So Taran Gadara came to Canada 7 years ago as an international student. He was doing an arts diploma program at Cambrian College in Sudbury, Ontario. And after completing that program, he chose to stay in the community that he came to cherish and set down roots. During his time here, he's worked multiple jobs, he's paid taxes, he got a dog, he's made friends. And most importantly to him, he learned to embrace his sexuality as a gay man. And that's something that he says he wasn't able to do back home in India. And so he's been wanting to stay in Canada. He feels like he has built the life he wants to live here. And unfortunately, he was told this year that he would be deported from Canada because he tried to renew his postgraduate work permit twice. Both times, those applications were rejected. And so then he applied for this thing called a pre-risk removal assessment. And so in that application, he detailed, you know, the issues he faced back home. So he was blackmailed and raped in India. And also he didn't feel safe as a gay man because he says in India, he's not able to be himself as society there is far from accepting homosexuality. So basically, he filed this other application. It also got denied. And so now he's facing the threat of deportation. And while he's waiting to hear what happens, he describes every day as like a ticking time bomb. And he's applied for his case to be reviewed by the federal court. So it's going to be a lengthy and costly legal battle. And his community and friends have set up a GoFundMe campaign to help him through that process. But as I said, he is struggling to kind of come to terms with what will happen to him if he has to go back to India.
How common are stories like Tarun's? I know we're going to get into the bigger picture here, but you just described a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of applications, rejections, reapplications, et cetera, and appeals. How unique is that?
They're more common than one would think. As the data that I reported on shows thousands of people are being deported each year. So there are people who are trying to maybe appeal the decisions for applications that were rejected and try to stay in this country. But in that time, people are facing a really difficult and stressful time trying to, you know, make a living while also figuring out what's going to happen next to them. Are they going to have to go back home? And if they're going back home, what does that situation look like? Some people fear that, you know, there's people that have threatened them back home, or they face persecution based on grounds such as their sexuality or their political or religious beliefs. So there's a lot of questions that they're asking themselves in this time.
This is an incredibly complex process that we're going to talk about here, as I mentioned, with all the bureaucracy involved. And if people listening have never been involved with it, it can be difficult to get all the terminology straight. So maybe let's just start basically there. What makes somebody a migrant as opposed to an immigrant?
Yeah, that's a great question. So an immigrant is someone who has been granted the right to live in Canada permanently by immigration authorities. So they're able to get permanent residency and eventually Canadian citizenship. Whereas a migrant is someone who has either a temporary work permit or study permit, or who's seeking asylum, meaning they came to Canada and they're asking for a safe haven because of their dire situation in their home country. For example, as I mentioned, this could be LGBTQ plus individuals who fear persecution back home, or people who have fled their home country because of political conflict and violence.
Now, when we talk about migrants, that includes an awful lot of people. I mean, you just mentioned Tarun is an international student. I think people are familiar with asylum seekers who cross the border from the United States. How many different kinds of migrants are there, and how different can their circumstances be?
So there are, as you mentioned, different categories of migrants. This does include people who come here through Canada's temporary foreign worker program, and they work on farms, fish processing plants, and other sectors like construction. International students are also considered migrants. They come here with a temporary permit, and they're able to stay here for some time after they graduate and work here. In some cases, people are able to extend their postgraduate work permits or qualify for permanent residency and eventually citizenship. There's also asylum seekers, as you mentioned. They either claim asylum online or when they cross the border and hope to make a case to obtain refugee status in Canada. There are also victims of human trafficking who qualify for a temporary resident permit. And overall, because migrants don't have permanent residency or citizenship, they aren't able to vote or enjoy the same rights and protections as Canadian citizens and permanent residents.
That is a lot. Do we know how many migrants are in the country at any given time, even just roughly?
Yeah, so I think we have to distinguish between migrants who are here and undocumented migrants. So as of January 1st, Canada was home to 2.67 million temporary residents or migrants, as we know. Of that population, there are an estimated 500,000 undocumented migrants living in Canada. Again, these are either asylum seekers or people who have fallen out of legal status because their temporary work or study permits expired. So this could be an international student like Taryn, who came here to study as an international student with a temporary study permit. After he graduated, he had a postgraduate work permit, and then that postgraduate work permit expired. So he fell out of legal immigration status and now has become undocumented. In this time, he's been applying to obtain legal status again and to be able to stay in this country. But at the moment, he's living with uncertainty and not knowing whether he'll be able to stay in this country. And this could also apply to, for example, a temporary foreign worker who, let's say, was working on a farm and they're facing abusive or exploitative conditions on that farm. And they choose to leave that farm. But because they come here with a temporary work permit, it may be tied to that specific employer. So then they fall out of legal immigration status that way. And they may fear that they'll be deported at any moment because they no longer have that legal status.
Speaking of deportation, what is the federal government's chosen position on these undocumented migrants who are in Canada? Do they want them all deported? Do they want them to find a way to stay here? Like, what have they said about how they're tackling this? 500,000 is a lot of people.
Yeah, so the government recently said that it's planning a broad and comprehensive program that would allow many undocumented people to stay here and apply for permanent residency. In December, Immigration Minister Mark Miller says he's planning to present this plan to cabinet in the spring. So we're waiting to see what that plan really entails. In the meantime, migrant advocates are hoping that this will decrease the number of deportations from Canada. They also say that the government should put a pause on deportations while it's drafting this program because Some of the same people who would be affected by such a program are currently being deported, and it's coming at a steep cost to taxpayers. At the same time, the government is trying to juggle things like housing and healthcare, and with more temporary residents who are here, there's talk of increased pressure on things like housing and healthcare. So there's a lot that really goes into planning immigration targets each year. So that's currently what they're looking at. And migrant advocates, however, are hoping that this program is broad and clear so that it captures as many undocumented people who are already here, who are already working here, paying taxes and contributing to society.
Your piece examined the government's previous approach to migrants and deportations and how, even though, as you mentioned, they are planning allegedly this program this spring to keep people in the country, deportations are rising. How much are they rising by, and what does that look like compared with previous years under this government?
Yeah, so in the last 2 years alone, we know there were more than 23,000 deportations. So this is the highest number since 2012, when Stephen Harper's government deported nearly 19,000 people in a single year. We know in 2021, Canada deported 7,505 people. This cost about $43 million in taxpayer money. In 2022, we deported 8,297. This cost about $53 million. In 2023, we deported 14,962. This cost about $58 million. So the numbers have steadily increased since 2021. And the reason we decided to look at these specific figures from 2021 is because in December 2021, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, in a mandate letter to then Immigration Minister Sean Fraser, he asked that the immigration minister look into ways to regularize the status of undocumented people living here and build on existing pilot programs. So, for example, during the COVID-19 pandemic, there were asylum seekers who were working in the healthcare field and they were filling in key gaps during the pandemic, for example, long-term care homes. And because of their contributions, the federal government decided to propose this program called the Guardian Angels Program. And they allowed those folks to stay here and to apply for permanent residency. So basically, the federal government in December 2021 said that it's going to expand on such programs and allow more undocumented people to stay and work here. However, the numbers show that since 2021, the number of people being deported has actually increased, and the amount of money that's being spent is in the millions. So the question is, why is the federal government increasingly deporting people if it's planning to regularize the status or allow more people to be able to qualify for permanent residency?
Why are these people being deported? I think some people listening assume that that person has done something in order to face deportation. I think a lot of times people's minds go to crime, but there are a ton of different reasons that this stuff happens. What's most common?
There are several reasons why people are being deported. This includes security reasons, criminality, financial reasons, and misrepresentation. So if they were to misrepresent themselves while they're applying to stay here legally as an immigrant. But based on data from the Canada Border Services Agency, the main reason people are being deported is non-compliance, which is a term CBSA uses to describe people without a visa, such as refugee claimants, people who overstay their status. So that could be like Taran Gadara, who, as an international student graduate, he decided to stay here. His postgraduate work permit ended and he has remained in the country, as well as people who are working or studying without authorization. So someone, let's say, who came here with a temporary work permit and is still working here, but they don't have any permit to allow them to stay here.
But that includes people like Taran who are actively trying to stay here and are actively, as you mentioned off the top, applying to all these different programs and for appeals and et cetera, et cetera. So it's not like they're, you know, just on the run here, like they're actively working towards permanent residency.
Yeah, exactly. And I do want to note that the immigration system in Canada is rather complex. So people like Taran Gadara may be unaware that they're working here even without authorization while they're waiting for their case to be reviewed. In his case, he was working here while his case was being reviewed, and he didn't know that he wasn't allowed to be working. So he's since stopped working, but it's difficult to understand some of the technicalities of the immigration system. So there are reasons why some people may fall into issues. And, you know, sometimes it's helpful to have an immigration lawyer, but again, that can be costly. So not everyone has access to that.
I want to know a little bit more about how confusing and intricate, I guess, for lack of a better term, the system can be. Because I think a lot of people listening think that, like, okay, you either have your papers and you're good, or you're not and you're breaking the law and you should be deported. But is it black and white like that? And how many people like that just fall through the cracks?
Yeah, I think it's hard to really explain unless you really look at the people who are actually in those situations.
Right.
There are people who come here with a temporary work permit, and let's say they've worked during that time, and then they have children here, and they're born in Canada. So their children become Canadian citizens. And so you'd think that in that situation, the parents would be able to stay here, but sometimes the parents will face deportation orders. So they're not actually able to stay anymore, but their children are here. So then it's a case of deciding, do you take your children with you to your country of origin? What are you going to do? Are you going to try to apply to get that application reviewed? It's very complex for people in those situations. Or let's say, yeah, it was a temporary foreign worker who fled a farm where they were facing exploitation and they want to come and work here. It's difficult because some of them may be tied to closed work permits. So they're trying to figure out how to stay and work here legally, but the immigration system is complex to navigate. And if you add language barriers on top of that, mental health challenges, it can be very hard to understand what to do exactly. So there are people who also may fall out of status and not necessarily know like how exactly to regain status. Or let's say they're trying, but then their application fails. They don't really understand why. It's hard to get a hold of Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship Canada. So there are a lot of complexities that are actually at play that people may not see when they're thinking about undocumented migrants being in the country.
When you talk to people who advocate on behalf of undocumented migrants, you mentioned earlier that it's a difficult thing to balance given the housing crisis and the healthcare crisis. Are we seeing more resentment towards this population given the strain on Canadian resources?
I think for sure we are. And I think advocates would say that that's misplaced criticism. These people are here already. They're already working here. They're already contributing to the country's tax base. If they were to stay, they could continue to contribute to the country's tax base, to the economy, to fill in critical labor gaps, like in healthcare, for example. The advocates I spoke to would say that it's the government's over-reliance on temporary labor that has led to this issue. If we were allowing these people to come here on a permanent resident status basis, they would be able to contribute here and work here, and there would be no issue of having to deport them and spend millions of dollars each year to deport people from the country. However, yes, we do need to think about things like housing. So can we be building more housing in the time that we are allowing more people to come here? I think these are all questions that people are tossing around these days. I can't say for sure what the exact response should be, but I do think that there's more to it than, you know, it's just immigrants that are to blame for this issue, and that seems to be that immigrants and migrants have become the scapegoat for the issues that we're facing in Canada.
And you just mentioned, you know, it's blame towards immigrants and migrants, but there is a distinction there, right? As you point out, like migrants are already here and already contributing and hopefully already have homes and healthcare. But meanwhile, the government has sky-high immigration targets, which are not people who are already living and working and contributing to Canada.
Yeah, so the way that the government sets those immigration targets, it tries to take into account how many people it can support if they were to bring in a certain number each year. I wouldn't say that this necessarily corresponds with the number of temporary residents that are coming here. So, for example, if an asylum seeker tries to come into Canada, this isn't someone that the Canadian government has already accounted for in its immigration targets. So it's a bit complex because they're trying to set immigration targets for permanent residents who are coming here. And then they're on the side, there may be, you know, asylum seekers coming to the country who are fleeing war or persecution back home. So they also need to think about those folks.
Right.
But it's difficult because they're setting a specific target and they're trying to keep within those targets. But then there are temporary residents who are coming, or maybe they're staying past the terms of their permits. And so it becomes complex because then you have a lot of people in this country, more than you had accounted for or hoped for. And so it becomes a question of what do you do with all these people? And again, this is something that advocates are saying could be addressed with some kind of broad and comprehensive regularization program that would capture people who are coming here on a temporary basis. They aren't necessarily making the case for more temporary residents to come here, but they're making a case for the ones that are here to be better supported, to be able to access the same rights and protections as permanent residents and Canadian citizens.
So last question then, we're expecting a proposal or legislation from the government this spring. What will you and other people who report on this issue and advocates be looking for when the language of that policy comes out? What would actually make a difference here?
Advocates are proposing that the government stay true to its 2021 commitment to put forward a regularization program that would allow more undocumented people to stay in Canada. They're asking for this program to be broad and clear so lots of undocumented people who are already in the country will be captured in it and will be able to continue contributing to Canada's tax base, economy, and society. And if that program is broad and comprehensive, we should see the number of deportations go down over time. If it's not for cases like criminality or security grounds where, you know, we actually fear the person being in the country, in those cases, yes, we may still choose to deport those folks. But people who are here who just have fallen out of legal immigration status, those people would then be able to stay and contribute to the country. So basically, what I'll be looking for as a reporter is to see how broad and comprehensive the program really will be, as the government says it will be. So will this only cater to people working in specific industries, as we've seen in the past, like the Guardian Angels program, where it was asylum seekers who were working in healthcare or people working in construction who had a pilot program dedicated to them that allowed them to apply for permanent residency? Or will this apply to all people, regardless of what industry they're working in? So I'll be looking to see what kinds of people will be accepted, how many people will be accepted, and how long the program will be as well.
Nooshin, thank you so much for explaining this to us. It's a really complex issue, and I'm glad I'll be better versed in it by the time this policy arrives.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, Jordan, for your time.
Nooshin Ziafati writing in The Breach. That was The Big Story. For more, you can head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. As you know, we take feedback, we take suggestions, we take requests. You can give them to us by emailing us at hello@thebigstorypodcast.ca or by calling us and leaving a voicemail, 416-935-5935. The Big Story is in any and every podcast player, and of course, it's on your smart speaker. Just ask it to play The Big Story Podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.